Tonight on The Daily Debrief, actor Jesse Smollett's attorney fights back over another prosecutor taking another look at his case. And four Chicago cops are out of a job, all because of this officer-involved shooting, which already resulted in two criminal trials. Plus, accident or murder?
She didn't go downstairs. She knew something was happening.
Does the then 4-year-old sister of an alleged 2-year-old murder victim know what happened?
They knew she was killed.
How did one defendant respond?
Did this interaction seem out of the ordinary to you?
Yes.
The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Friday, July 19th.
Welcome to The Debrief. Glad you're with us on this hot and humid day across most of the United States. Our guests will be with us in just a moment. A defense attorney for actor Jesse Smollett is fighting back about the selection of an independent prosecutor to look into his case. Chicago's top state prosecutor dropped 16 felony counts against Smollett, which accused him of lying about being attacked. Since then, a judge has ordered a special prosecutor to look into the matter. Smollett's attorney calls the case a travesty of justice, which is depriving Smollett of his constitutional rights, presumably against double jeopardy. The attorney accused the press of failing to critically examine the case and accused the courts of just following the press. The aftermath of the Laquan McDonald shooting in Chicago, the shooting of an African-American suspect wielding a knife, has again rocked the police department there. The Chicago Police Board has fired Sergeant Stephen Franco and officers Ricardo Viramontes and Janet Mondragon for making false statements about the shooting. Officer Daphne Sebastian was terminated for bringing discredit to the department. All four can legally appeal their termination. The four terminations surround this shooting we've discussed many times here on The Debrief. It shows Officer Jason Van Dyke approaching Laquan McDonald and pulling the trigger as McDonald began to raise his arm. Van Dyke is now in prison for murder. The jury, which judged whether his conduct was criminal, did not buy this explanation for what happened.
He waved the knife from his lower right side upwards across his body towards my left shoulder.
And when he did that, what did you do, officer?
I shot him.
And when you say you shot him, do you know if you actually hit him or not?
Not really. No. Overruled.
I'm sorry?
Do you know if you actually hit him or not when you shot him?
I have no idea. I didn't know at the time.
All right. Do you know how many shots you fired?
No.
What happened when you started shooting?
I'm sorry?
What happened when you started shooting?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, please?
Sure. You all right?
Yeah.
What happened when you started shooting? What happened to Laquan McDonald when you started shooting?
Eventually, he fell to the ground.
Did he ever drop that knife?
No.
And after you realized that he fell to the ground, did you stop shooting?
Once I recognized that he was on the ground, I stopped shooting.
That testimony resulted in a murder conviction. But a group of other officers charged criminally in connection with this case did win at trial. A judge acquitted lead detective David March, Van Dyke's partner Joseph Walsh, and Thomas Gaffney. All three were charged with covering up parts of the shooting. They chose a bench trial instead of being tried by a jury. Is it a question of accident or murder? That's what a Georgia jury has to figure out in the case of a couple whose 2-year-old foster child died in their care. Joseph and Jennifer Rosenbaum face a mix of murder and other charges related to the death of Layla Marie Daniel. Authorities say the little girl died from blunt force trauma to the abdomen, a cut pancreas, and other symptoms and signs of abuse. The defendants say the girl died accidentally by choking on a piece of chicken and that she was further injured during CPR. Let's begin our look at this case tonight with testimony from the lead detective about the injuries he observed at the victim's autopsy.
When you were at the autopsy, did you observe anything?
Yes.
What did you observe?
First thing I noticed was because they had the child nude on the metal table, and I just noticed that she was covered in bruises and scars.
Did you notice anything on her scalp?
Yes, there were like striation marks along the top of her head, like they had been done with, a sharp object across the top of her head.
That lead detective also interviewed the deceased victim's sister about just what happened while the defendants cared for them.
She did disclose how, whenever Jennifer gets mad at them, sometimes she snatches them or grabs them up by their arms, holds them up by their arms, things of that nature. And she made mention of, I want to say it was Layla being kicked at one time, but she never, I think that was it.
During cross-examination, the defense had to do something which personally drives me crazy. The defense had to refute bad information which had been disseminated about the case in local news reports.
You took out a warrant for Jennifer for failing to feed Layla, for starving Layla, correct?
I'd have to see the actual charging document.
You don't have the actual charging document with you?
I don't.
Okay. So you do not recall charging her with cruelty in the first for failure to feed?
That verbiage I don't remember, but I knew it was mostly related to the bruising and, the other broken bones and things of that nature that were sustained.
You later found out, did you not, that she was well-nourished. Isn't that true?
Layla
was well-nourished.
I later found out from the ME that, she couldn't really substantiate that the child was malnourished.
In other words, she was well-nourished. Yes? Is that a yes?
Yes.
But story about malnourishment had gotten out into the press and into the public sphere. Isn't that true?
No, I got that information from talking to other witnesses, just based on information that I received.
You're not listening to my question.
Okay.
That story of malnutrition had gotten out into the public after you took out those warrants.
Maybe, I'm not sure.
Much information has been spent discussing the victim's sister, Millie. And here, a nurse described Millie's injuries.
So in different stages of healing, because some bruises were like purple or blue, some there was some redness there, and then also there's almost a yellow color. So as bruises heal, they first are like pink or red, and then they sometimes can become like a dark red or purple color, and then as they heal even more, they become like a yellow or green color.
And is that what you notated on the injury in 6 to 78?
Yes.
Other injuries that you know?
A bruise on her right third finger, her right upper arm, the right side of her neck, behind the right ear, bottom of the right earlobe, her right cheek, the left side of her forehead, left side of her neck, right knee, left ankle, and the right hip, as well as an abrasion to the her left upper back and the back of her head, and a red bumpy rash to the anal and vaginal area.
Overall, how many injuries did you find in Lily Place's body as far as bruises, scrapes, or scratches?
I'd have to count them. Counted at least 15 bruises, two abrasions on her.
So, what about the defense claim that the victim died choking on chicken? Well, a foster care investigator said the victim's sister relayed that story to her, but that it appeared to come from or originate from one of the defendants.
And did Millie did you ask her any questions, or did she make any statements to you?
Along the way to the room, she had said that her sister was choking on chicken. She said she missed her and wanted her. When we got to the room, the medical examiner asked her a few questions about her own marks and bruises, and she would say she was riding her bike or she fell at gymnastics.
And when she stated that her sister was choking on chicken, did she tell you if she saw that or someone had told her that?
She didn't tell me. She was talking to the doctor in the room, and she just said that she heard that her sister was choking on chicken.
Did she tell you who she heard that from? Did she say who she heard that?
She said her second mommy.
And did she tell you who her second mommy was?
Yes.
And who was that?
Ms. Rosenbaum.
Some of the most damaging testimony in this case came directly from that victim's sister, whom we've been talking about. That sister testified earlier in this case, but listen now to this recorded interview with the sister, which the jury heard today.
What happened? Were you there when they were dying?
Well, yeah, I was in the house, mm-hmm. and I wasn't by her.
Okay, tell me about that. Tell me, what were you in the house? What were you doing?
I was watching TV.
Where were you watching TV? In your room, in the living room, outside, where?
Probably.
I don't know, I have to ask. So, see, you're a smart girl, so where were you watching TV then?
I was watching TV.
So when you were upstairs watching TV, where was Layla?
She was downstairs eating, and then she choked on her food.
She choked on her food?
Yeah.
Okay, do you remember what Layla was eating?
Yeah.
Did you eat that day too?
A school counselor testified that she spoke to that sister, Millie, about what happened when the victim, Layla, died.
Jennifer told Millie to go upstairs and to stay there. She said that Layla was not talking. They called 911. They knew she was killed, were her exact words. She didn't go downstairs. She knew something was happening. And she also said that Jennifer had spanked Layla. She was not tearful about it. She was strong, stoic almost, you know, for her age, with no emotion. It was just a matter of fact, this is what happened.
Criminal defense attorney Sarah Becker joins us tonight from Atlanta here on The Debrief. So, Sarah, it's depressing and it's painful to listen to this stuff day after day because we have witness after witness after witness basically corroborating bits and pieces of the same story. We've got injuries on the victim and the sister. We've got this story about force feeding the victim, which may have caused the choking, and we're hearing it out of the mouth of the sister who was just, 4 years old when this happened. Do kids lie about this stuff or should we trust what she says?
So that's a really interesting question, Erin, because at the age of four, what we know and what science has shown over and over again is that kids don't necessarily know the difference between truth and a lie. It's why a four-year-old is typically, you know, has to be vetted a little bit more carefully before you put them on a stand in a criminal trial. You have to show that they understand the difference and they know. So one thing for certain, though, is hearing these words in that little young voice, and she's talking so openly and so candidly with the police, without really the kind of emotional realization that we would have as adults talking about these things, is certainly shocking. I would expect that we will see presentation in the defense's case from an expert regarding the validity and kind of the pitfalls that can come with accepting statements from children this age. But the jury has heard those words out of her mouth in that tone, and that's certainly a major hurdle for the defense to overcome.
It can also be said that kids really don't have much of a filter to try to basically lie at all. They just sort of tell it the way they see it, and I might expect to hear such an expert from the state. We're going to move along, though. Be back with you, Sarah, at the end of the broadcast, because still ahead tonight here on The Debrief, we remain with this case with testimony about whether the victim really died on Chicken, Choking on Chicken. That's when we return. We're back to the trial of Joseph and Jennifer Rosenbaum, where an officer testified about the story he learned from the defendants about how the victim supposedly died choking on chicken.
Jennifer told me that Layla had been sick previously with some congestion and had just started eating solid foods in the last couple days. Layla was in a high chair eating chicken tenders. I think she said carrots and some yogurt. Looked back and saw Layla kind of moving back and forth in the chair. She went over to check on her, thought she may be choking, took her out of the high chair, performed a Heimlich maneuver on her. She then took her over to the sink and started hitting her on her back. She said she hit her hard. She said at that point she tried using her finger to dislodge whatever was choking Layla, and also she used a butter knife to try to dislodge what was in the choking Layla.
Did she tell you when she used her fingers to sweep, to dislodge whatever she was choking on, did she tell you if anything came out?
She didn't. No, she said after doing those type things, she's already at the sink, so she took the faucet and tried to give Layla water using the faucet. That didn't work either.
And did she tell you what other measures she took trying to get something out of her throat?
After that point, she said Layla was, during the whole thing, Layla was kicking. So at some point, she dropped Layla from about 1 to 2 feet off the ground. Once on the ground, she said she tried to perform CPR on Layla.
An emergency room nurse had the sad and terrible job of notifying everyone that the victim had died. The problem was the behavior she says she witnessed from the defendants.
Donald Cleveland was with me to do the death notification in this case. So at that point, we proceeded to tell them that Layla had died.
Now, prior to that, did they ask you any questions?
No. In my experience, when you typically walk into a case like that, the family member they immediately want to know what happened. They want to see the child. They want to know what's going on. Like I said, when I first went in, they were kind of quiet and didn't really ask a lot of questions at that point in time. Joseph didn't really show a whole lot of emotion. He just kind of kept sitting there. I remember Jennifer was sitting there, and she started rubbing her eyes. There wasn't any tears coming out at that point in time. She just kept saying, I can't cry anymore.
Did this interaction seem out of the ordinary to you?
Yes.
And why is that?
In my experience, when you notify family members or, you know, anybody involved with a care, a child especially, family members are typically, they're beside themselves, they're sobbing, they're crying. They can be angry at times, like they're just distraught. So that wasn't a typical reaction that I've seen.
To be fair, you would acknowledge that people do react differently, correct?
Yes, sir.
Did either of them say anything else to you while you were in the room?
It was kind of quiet at first, and then I asked if they had any questions, and then Jennifer proceeded to say that the child had been choking on chicken, and she tried to do the Heimlich maneuver.
The defendants are trying to say, of course, that the victim's injuries occurred during CPR, life-saving treatments. A number of first responders and doctors who treated the victim say that is not likely.
Did you have any other concerns other than the cardiac arrest that caused the death?
Yes.
What was the concern?
Diffuse bruising, upper chest, pelvis. Then, you know, when we moved her over, you noticed the back, kind of just top to bottom bruising. I mean, it's just an odd location. I mean, a child was going to get bruises and bony prominences. They fall, they hit their elbow, they hit their knee, you know, they bump their forehead. They don't really hit the pelvis very good. They don't hit flat on their back and get multiple bruises on their back, you know, or their neck. It was an odd appearance, didn't look right.
And in the over 100,000 patients that you've treated, have you ever seen anything like the bruising you saw related to resuscitative methods?
No.
One of the officers who testified in this case said he never was told that the chicken came out of the child's body. Logic would suggest that if the child choked, someone would have found the chicken in her airway if it didn't come out, but no one did.
So the signs that you would have been looking for was, I guess you said vomit or food or something like that in her airway.
Somewhere.
Did you find any of that when they were there?
No, she was clean.
And I think the next thing you said was the coloration of her face.
Mm-hmm.
What type of coloration would you be looking for?
I'd be expecting something a little bit more blue.
Okay. And did you see that when Layla Dane?
She was very pale.
And you indicated that you also were looking her eyes for hemorrhaging.
Yes.
That hemorrhaging that you would find that would be consistent with choking, did you find it here?
No, ma'am.
And then you said you would check for bruising.
Yes.
Because she didn't have a pulse. Is this what you observed when you saw her?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And in your medical opinion, was that consistent with the child who had been choking on a piece of cheese?
No, ma'am.
Okay, criminal defense attorney Sarah Becker back with us tonight here on The Debrief. So, Sarah, the jury has to reconcile two things here. The victim's sister said that Layla died being force-fed with a butter knife. The defendant said that she was trying to use a butter knife to dislodge what the child was choking on. Two different versions of what the butter knife was being used for. How does the jury try to separate which is the true story?
It's a really good question. Aaron, I think that the defense will probably highlight that in their case. It would be a smart thing to do to try to put credence to the defendant's version of the facts. Again, I think this may come in to where you may get an expert to come and testify about the child's statements and whether or not it was clear, whether maybe the child could have seen her putting the butter knife down Layla's throat in an attempt to save her and interpreted that as Layla being force-fed.
Yeah, you know, I've taken plenty of first aid courses and I've never been taught to use a butter knife to try to dislodge something. Another thing that needs to be dealt with in this case here, the nurse said that the defendant's behavior was odd after she had to deliver the horrible news that the girl had died. Is it because they already knew or is it because they were guilty?
That's another question that defense really will be called upon to answer, I think. We know that the defense technically has no obligation to put up any evidence or any case, no convincing to do. But in a case like this, they really do. And from my point of view, I think that at least one of the defendants have to take the stand and answer these questions.
That's going to be tough. You know, they're defended by the same attorney here. We get into issues of spousal privilege. That could open up a can of worms. Sarah Becker, though, we're out of time tonight. Appreciate your insights here on The Debrief.
Thank you very much.
And try to stay cool this weekend. We're going to wrap up. We'll be back with live trial coverage Monday morning. The Debrief back at 5 o'clock. We'll see you then.